Chapter 41. A cold rain dumped buckets of water against Ron's windows. It was Saturday morning, and he was on his way to Wellmont. But he stopped the car at the recruiting station and decided to have a new look at the place from the outside. The posters were like marquee pictures. Ron wondered why they didn't show a picture of a guy with no legs or somebody who'd gotten his head blown off. That would sure bring people in. He told himself that he should stay away from places like this one. He was afraid that somehow the tendrils could reach out and grab him. "That's because you're a fucking chicken," said a voice inside him. Ron recognized it as being the one that spoke with a newsreel kind of tone and narrated episodes from war movies. "Fuck you," he shouted at the voice in the building. "You didn't get me. I'm not ever going to be like you." "You sound like a baby having a tantrum," said another he couldn't dismiss because it sounded and looked like his father. He threw the car into gear. There was one spot in the indoor parking lot, and Ron decided not to try to squeeze into it. He was embarrassed by the thought that someone hung out there could see him punking down from the spot. He inched the car back and forward and tried to turn around. It took him 5 back and forths. The instructor looked at Ron and said, "I'm afraid you didn't pass. You failed to properly parallel park your vehicle, and in my judgment, you're driving too slowly." Ron had expected to fail parallel parking. There was no disgrace in that. He was driving this boat of an Oldsmobile that was at least 25 feet long. But how the hell could the guy say he was going too slow? It took 2 problems to fail. If the guy had just knocked him down for the parking, he would be in. "I'm trying to be careful." "That's the point," said the instructor. "If you acted this way in the open road, you could be a hazard." Ron studied his face. He wore reflecting sunglasses and had a mustache, which gave him a suave, well-oiled appearance. "If I was pussy with my skirt hiked up around my ass and my legs open, you wouldn't care what kind of hazard I was. I'm going to recommend that your permit be extended and that you be tested again in 2 months." "Great." About a month later, he passed his test with the help of a friendly instructor from Jersey City who bought his clothes where Ron's mother worked. During the test, Ron knocked over several cones and almost damaged a vehicle that was peacefully making its way along the course. It happened because he made a U-turn without looking in the mirror because he'd forgotten his glasses and had to borrow the ones worn by his mother's boss. The instructor had to mash his foot on top of the brake on top of Ron's foot in order to avoid the collision. The car that the instructor was trying to avoid was frozen about 4 inches from Ron's rear bumper. Ron didn't realize how close they were until he removed the borrowed glasses. He found himself transfixed by the pale, trembling face of the instructor, who managed to turn off the engine on Ron's borrowed car. They didn't finish the course, but Ron got his license anyway. A pair of glasses had broken when they came off in the almost collision, and Ron apologized to his mother's boss while thanking him for bribing the instructor. Ron found an easy space on the street and went into Mel Wellmont through the back door. The same small group of heads stopped what they were doing, looked when the door opened. Ron smiled and thought that no matter what else happened in the world, this would always remain the same. He walked up to the counter from which Butchie and TJ surveyed the world. "What brings you in here, Homer? I heard you were out demonstrating and getting all that free snatch." "You don't think anything like that really comes for free, do you, Butchie?" Well, Homer, I don't know. Some of them freaky-looking snatches I see walking around gotta get rid of it for free because it's so bad that not even you guys would want to be stuck into it for more than a couple minutes. How you doing, TJ? Ron asked. TJ nodded and looked at Butchie, wiped an imaginary line of sweat. Have you heard anything from Hanky? Butchie burst like an overripe fruit. Hank's got a tasty snatch to chew on, he laughed. You don't see him out demonstrating because he gets his private demonstrations whenever he needs them. Ron liked the idea of being taken for someone who demonstrated. It made him feel like he was wearing a badge of courage. He's okay, T, said Ron. He felt the back door open and his own head moved involuntarily towards it. Here comes the captain of the Looney Tunes crew now, said Butchie, as they all saw Quimpy making his way through the doors. On Saturday afternoon, Jolie and Hank went out to shop for Hank's work clothes. Hank felt alternately drafted and convicted as he stared at the brown khaki. Jolie was brimming with pride and patted Hank's belly. I'll get you nice and flat, she said. I'll bet you will, said Hank, not thinking about his stomach muscles. It was too much to bear. No matter what the stakes, he couldn't figure out how he'd let this happen to him. Jolie loved the way he looked in work pants. They felt terrible, thought Hank. They were baggy and rustled like canvas sacks. Do you think we could go visit Myrtle and Ernie tonight? Hank began to get sick at the sound of their names, but said, okay. And went into the other room, changed back into his real clothes. Why don't you leave them on, said Jolie. She was picturing her father sitting around the house on Saturday afternoons in finally laundered work clothes. Because I hate them, said Hank. Jolie stared at the closed bedroom door and began to feel twinges of warning. This was like sending a child off to school. She remembered how Tony was always anxious to jump into his big rig and roar down the street for her. Hank could smell the dogs as they waited for someone to answer the door. He was holding a bag of donuts that Jolie had suggested they bring. Myrtle opened the door and greeted them with a big, guess who's here to visit, Ernie? Greeting. Dogs caught sight of Hank. In one startled moment, he realized that the dual excitement of seeing him and smelling the donuts was going to be too much for them. The first dog to hit let out a whooping kind of yelp as she planted her paws on Hank's chest. The second went straight for the donuts and unceremoniously ripped them out of Hank's hand. As he fell down, Hank heard Ernie's voice gleefully shouting, Wowee! Isn't everybody happy to see you? The dogs took turns, alternately moving to the bag of donuts for furious sniffs and licking Hank's face. Well, give him a chance to get in the house first, said Myrtle. Those animals really love you, she said to Hank, who was grateful for being allowed to stand up. Ernie's newest game consisted of trying to work himself up to super-duper burps. He said it started because his diet soda gave him gas. He was trying to teach the dogs to respond to specific burp commands that he'd devised. Ernie was sure the act would be of interest to any number of variety shows that featured people like himself with unique and creative talents. Hank watched the demonstration through a mask of interest. On a few occasions, he felt his eyes stray to the closed door of the room where he and Jolie had stayed when they had first gotten together. Hank was too depressed to get out of bed the next morning. How interesting could any place that made storm windows and screens be? His father was going to be his boss, and he knew his old man would show him off like a little pet when old customers came into the shop. Hank would forever being called into his father's office to meet Billy somebody or Harry whoever. "Are you excited about starting work tomorrow?" Jolie had asked him as soon as he'd opened his eyes. Actually, she said it to him over coffee, but it was the first thing she thought to say to him that day. "I haven't been able to think about anything else," he said. "Do you think that possibly I could interest you in something else?" she asked and reached for his cock. "I don't think so," said Hank. He was sure his dead meat was in too deep a depression to do anything but slump over. Jolie felt more twinges, but she was going to try to remain cheerful in spite of them. At 2 p.m., she would be back on duty and work until 2 a.m. the next morning. "What are you going to do this afternoon?" "I don't know," said Hank. "In a few minutes, I'm going to call Ron." Ron abruptly said that he had no one to bring to their house, that the girl he was trying to date had just told him the night before on the phone that she didn't think she was going to be able to sneak out of her boyfriend. Jolie thought he was even more of an asshole. She wondered when Hank was going to stop chasing after him. Ron listened to Hank's story without saying much. He could understand how Hank felt all fucked up from the amount of shit that was being dumped on him. "You ain't gotta do any fucking thing you don't want to do. It really is that simple, isn't it?" said Hank. They were sitting in Ron's room, in the midst of a pile of books and papers Ron had buried himself in for the last 2 days. Irma was already a memory and hadn't called or heard from Rebecca, but he was catching up on everything that he hadn't been doing. Marjorie and George were out for the afternoon, and Hank had a joint that they smoked in slow appreciation. Hank felt warm and melancholy among so many reminders of school. He felt for the first time in a while that he belonged there. He decided to tell Ron everything about how he hated the idea of working for his father, but how losing Jolie would be worse. The pot was giving Ron a comfortable distance from things. He studied his pile of books, and they looked back at him with a friendly spirit. "Why did you stop going to school, Hank?" "Mathematics," said Hank decidedly. "Is what you got now better than mathematics?" Hank repeated the question with a smile that showed his dimples. Ron never noticed them before and figured that Jolie was somehow responsible for them being there. "I don't know," said Hank. "Is it?" Ron had the feeling that Hank was asking him if he had any idea of how good it was to get laid with a woman like Jolie every night. Is she really that good a fuck? "All the time," said Hank in a weary tone that Ron took to mean that Jolie liked the fuck more than Hank did. He decided that was a big part of the problem that Hank really needed to talk about. "I get the feeling that they're gonna get me no matter which way I turn." "Why do you think they want to get you?" "Because they get everybody," said Hank, feeling like he'd been gotten so many times and in so many places that his mind and body was a mass of scar tissue. "It's probably because they don't want to see us get anything we weren't able to get away with." "Well, fuck 'em. We don't owe them anything. Maybe they wouldn't be able to get me if I went back to school," said Hank. "I guess they can get you any place," said Ron. "You ever think about the war anymore?" "No," said Hank. "Has it changed?" Ron thought that Hank sounded like Dylan. He observed how Hank's uncombed hair looked more and more like Dylan's as it got longer. "You gonna comb your hair ever again?" Hank tried to run his fingers through part of his reddish-blonde hangle. I never try. They both laughed hard. Sometimes, though, it gets all knots that really hurt, if you don't get rid of them. Just like your life, said Ron quickly.
Just like my life, repeated Hank.
Do you like your knots, said Ron.
Hank grinned in his I am really crazy smile, he said.
Sometimes they sort of have intricate patterns in the curls.
Do the patterns tell you anything?
No, they're just pretty. We already know where your desire for pretty things has gotten you. Hank had the realization that for the first time in a really long time, he was talking to another human being and not worrying about what Joe Lee was doing. He told Ron about it. It probably just means that you don't love her as much anymore. Hank was stunned and didn't say anything.